Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Menopause is coming and the men have all left town, but I'm not giving up until I see that baby crown. 39 and single, can someone help me out? He could be balding, bearded, short or tall, funny, smart, love basketball, from gay to straight, black to white, tiny eyes with an underbite. I just need
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to SpermCast. We have a wonderful show for you this week with Dr. Yelly, and I'll get to that in a little while. First, I want to thank my newest Patreon members. Ooh, I have 258 patrons, and we're at $739 a month. But only one new Patreon subscriber this week, Royzen. Looks like raisin, but with an O. Royzen. Thank you, Royzen. You mean a lot to me. And now, time for the show and some updates. Okay, so when I left you last week, I was pretty sure I was going to have a chemical pregnancy. My HCG had doubled significantly, but it was still very low for where it should be at that point in a pregnancy. Dr. Chung told me to come in on Friday, Valentine's Day, and said that if my HCG was not over 300 by that point, that she would recommend that I stop taking my progesterone and estrogen and let my body take over, which would basically lead to a period. So I didn't hold out any hope. I even made plans to go to the Korean spa this weekend to soak in their hot tubs, something you're definitely not allowed to do if you're pregnant. But secretly, I was hoping for a miracle. I kept peeing on pregnancy tests, and wouldn't you know it, my line kept getting the tiniest bit darker every day. Since I couldn't control the future, I just decided to enjoy my week of positive pregnancy tests. I was pregnant until proven otherwise. Then Friday rolled around, and I did my blood test early in the morning and awaited the phone call with the results. And that's when I started to get a little nervous. Again, I knew there was no chance, but you know, maybe? At noon, my headshot client and makeup artist showed up, and I thought, shit, I do not want to get this call while I'm shooting. I didn't want to be around fun, happy, excited, laughing people. I wanted to be alone in a quiet and peaceful place. So I emailed Dr. Chung and asked her if she could call me with the results after 5 p.m. She replied, yes, I'll call you around that time. What did that short email mean? Did she already know the results? Was she keeping it short because she knew it was bad news? Or maybe it was good news and she didn't want to get me excited? Oh my God, it was all I could think about for the next 5 hours. 5 p.m. got closer and my client and makeup artist were still there and still excited and laughing. Finally, I had to tell them to get the fuck out. But like, I said it in a nice way. Then I sat and I waited. I checked my phone. Ringer on. Volume up. I checked it again. The ringer's on. The volume is up. And suddenly, a missed call from an unknown caller. No! And then I realize I've got this setting on my phone that sends unknown calls to my voicemail. And while I was trying to fix it, I got another missed call from an unknown caller. And then a voicemail.
Hi, Molly. It's Dr. Chung calling. I'm so sorry I missed you. I just wanted to call with the results of your blood test from today. So the level is 72. So it did go up significantly, but, you know, at this point, because of where you are in this process, you're about 5 weeks pregnant based on the timing of the transfer. This level is really too low to be considered viable for a healthy pregnancy. So at this point, I recommend that you stop your medications, but I would like to make sure that the level is going down. Just in case it's an ectopic pregnancy. I don't think so, but just in case. So if you could come back on Wednesday for a repeat blood test, that would be great. But for now, please stop your medications, estrogen, progesterone, all of it. And then we'll repeat the level on Wednesday, and hopefully things will start to resolve on their own after you stop the meds. But if you have any questions, please let me know. I'm sorry that this pregnancy is not working out the way we hoped, but I am optimistic that we're going to get there. So hang in there. Happy Valentine's Day. And let me know if you have questions, okay? Bye, Molly.
I guess I'm going to the Korean spa, baby. I'm going to soak in those hot tubs and detox all these nasty hormones out of my body. Except, wait, what happens if I go back on Wednesday and my HCG is still going up? Is there still some microscopic sliver of a chance? Oh, man. What if I go to the Korean spa and this is a viable pregnancy and I raise my body temperature and then I am the reason the pregnancy ends? So I emailed Dr. Chung and this is what she said. Hi, Molly. I would love for you to treat yourself to a Korean spa day. I cannot say that there is 0% chance that the pregnancy is viable, but given your levels today, the chance has got to be less than 1%. If you're too worried about it and won't find it relaxing, then maybe you get a massage, but don't go into the steaming hot water. Hope this helps. Talk soon. Big hugs, Dr. Chung. I thought, okay, I'll go to the Korean spa once my pee tests start to fade. So, I clicked into my calendar to delete all of my medication alerts, and seeing them there, all on one page, got me feeling sentimental. Levothyroxine, 7 a.m. Progesterone injection, 9 a.m. Estrace, 10 a.m. Progesterone insert, 1 p.m. Estrace, 7 p.m. Progesterone insert, 9 p.m. Yeesh, that is a lot of work, and that's what an average day has looked like for me for the last month or so. I looked at myself from the outside with this affection. I thought, I am one tough motherfucker. I've got stamina. I've been putting my body and mind through the ringer for over a year, and I am not giving up. I am proud of myself and enduring all of this by myself, without a partner. I felt courageous and strong, and I don't know where I'll be in a week or a month or a year. Or if I'll always feel this kind of strength, but the love I feel for myself right now is more than any other love that I've felt on Valentine's Day in the past. And now that I've got you feeling sentimental too, or maybe you're thinking I'm just super cheesy, let me change the subject and tell you something absolutely absurd. Last week, this is a good one, everybody. Last week, I accidentally put one of my vaginal progesterone inserts into my urethra. Yeah, you heard that correctly. My urethra. My mom is gonna kill me for telling you this, but I had to. It's too funny not to. Okay, so I was at Melissa and Martin's watching The Bachelor when my progesterone insert alert went off on my phone, 9 p.m. I raced into the bathroom, not wanting to miss a single delicious and hideous moment of this garbage, trashy show. I ripped down my pants, put the pill in position, pushed, and it got stuck halfway into me. It wouldn't go in. And it kind of hurt. And then it wouldn't come out. What was happening? What was this pill stuck in? I started to panic. Do I need an ambulance? Oh no, what if I miss the rose ceremony? I pulled myself together and got a grip on the capsule with my fingernails, and I pulled it out. What had just happened? How did that happen? Is that even possible? I rinsed off the capsule and shoved it into the correct orifice and ran back to The Bachelor like nothing had ever happened. The next day, I asked my pediatrician friend and she told me that was impossible. Urethras are too tiny. But she's a pediatrician. Maybe kid urethras are tiny and my grown-up urethra is enormous. I did some research and discovered that the urethra in females is 4 centimeters long and 6 millimeters diameter. Guess what else is 6 millimeters in diameter? I measured it. My pill. Anyway, back to anatomy. The urethra is fused with the anterior wall of the vagina, and the opening of the urethra is between the clitoris and the vagina, about 2.5 centimeters south of the clitoris, in fact. That's a lot farther than I realized. I thought it was way up there, close to the buzzy bits. Despite my research, it still made no sense to me, and no one believed me, especially my mom. Oh my God, you should have heard her making fun of me. I thought, maybe I have a septum in my vagina that no one's ever noticed, and I put this in some vestigial hole. Or maybe the capsule just got vacuum sealed up into the folds of my labia somehow. I would have asked my doctor about it, but I completely forgot that it ever happened. And then 4 days later, I did it again. That's right, I did it again. What the hell is wrong with me? Except this time, I didn't panic. It was halfway up there, so I put my finger in my vagina, and lo and behold, I could feel the half of the capsule that was lodged in there, pressing up against my vaginal wall. Yeah, this wasn't stuck in no folds, people. This was lodged in my urethra. After pulling it out, making sure all of my pills were in the right holes, I grabbed my mirror and peed. And there it was, my urethra, right above my vagina, and not very close to my clitoris. So why aren't more people talking about this? I don't think people are embarrassed. I think I'm a freak. I only found 4 accounts of women inadvertently putting vaginal suppositories in their urethras. But here's something weird and interesting. I ended up finding articles about lots of foreign bodies found in the bladder, and apparently sticking things in your urethra is a form of autoeroticism. Bobby pins, electrical wire, safety pins. One report talked about having to surgically remove 4 kidney beans from the bladder. But the craziest? A full-sized pen. The woman they found this pen in, she had been having urinary discomfort for 6 years. When they discovered the pen, she said she had 0 recollection of a pen going in there. The point is, this happened to me, okay? I'm not crazy. I was just rushing. It probably won't happen to you, but just be careful and take your time when you're inserting your suppositories. And if this has happened to you, or if you're a doctor or a nurse and you catheterize people all the time and you know that this is possible, please feel free to message me and validate my experience, because no one believes me and they're making me feel like I'm crazy and I don't know my own body holes. And now, back to my fertility. Okay, so remember how I said I'd go to the Korean spa as soon as my pee sticks started fading? Well, they're not fading. Today, Monday, my pee stick is darker than ever. This means my HCG is still going up. This doesn't mean that it's going to turn into a viable pregnancy. In fact, maybe it means it's more likely that I'm having an ectopic pregnancy. But you know what? There's no way for me to know any of this at this moment. So for now, I'm still pregnant until proven otherwise, which will probably be on Wednesday. So let's start this interview, shall we? On last week's episode, Lauren Pritchard brought up that her next step might be mini IVF. Mini IVF is basically like regular IVF except with minimal stimulation, so you're not doing as many of the shots in the first 14 days of your cycle. While mini IVF isn't really even an option at most clinics, last week I got to meet with a doctor who not only does mini IVF, but whose clinic actually specializes in natural IVF. His name is Dr. Yelian, and his clinic is called Life IVF Center.
Hi, everyone.
I first heard about Dr. Yelian from a friend who's also a listener who now has 2 babies from Life IVF Center. Life IVF Center was established in May 2010.
Just to give a little bit my background, and I originally from China. Mm-hmm. I finished medical school there and also did my master's degree in OBGYN. Mm-hmm. So I came to the United States in 1987 and finished my PhD degree at the Michigan State University. My PhD mentor was Richard Duclos. And
Richard who?
Duclos.
Duclos.
Duclos, he is well-known. The endocrinologist, physiologist, mm-hmm. and embryologist.
Oh, wow.
So in his lab, and has been trained many of world-renowned embryologists. So I probably one of the embryologists he trained.
Are you an embryologist as well?
Actually, my first job was embryologist.
Oh, wow. Once an embryologist, always an embryologist? Or like, do you go into the lab now and still do embryology stuff?
I still can do that.
Wow.
Yes. And because of my training, so I think it gave me additional insight of the IVF practice. As a doctor now, so I think obviously back to my story and finishing my PhD. Mm-hmm. And then my first job was an embryologist and working at the Wayne State University, mm-hmm. and as IVF lab.
Okay.
So because of my medical background, and I was trained at MD and finished my OBGYN training, so I decided to take my United States medical license test. Mm-hmm. So I passed the test, and I had a chance to go back to my OBGYN residency again. So I finished the OBGYN residency, and which is 4 years.
Uh-huh.
And after then, and I finished the 2 years infertility fellowship at Wayne State University.
Okay.
So
where's Wayne State?
Wayne State is in Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah, it sounds familiar. Probably because I listened to your seminar.
Could it be, yes.
Oh, that's right. Once a month, Life IVF Center holds a free seminar for anybody to come and learn all about the clinic. In that seminar, they also raffle off one free cycle of IVF, y'all.
So after I finished my fellowship training, so I was a physician and also an associate professor at the Wayne State University and teaching medical students, teaching the residents and the fellows, and also doing surgery and doing IVF. So I really enjoy the time and to be a three position in one role. And so I really enjoy the time and as a professor.
Yeah, wow, that's a lot of education and experience.
Yes. So I decided to come to California to open Life IVF Center is purely by accident. Mm-hmm. And because of during my professorship and at the one of my international conference, I met another person and his name, the Osama Kado. And I think Dr. Kado changed my life path. And so I met him in New Orleans at the American Society for Reproductive Medicine annual meeting. Mm-hmm. So we became friends. And so one time he invited me to visit his clinic in Japan.
Oh.
So that visit completely changed my mind. And I always thought doing IVF only one way, which is conventional IVF, which is the practice, 99% of IVF practice in the United States, doing all conventional IVF.
Just to reiterate what I said earlier, conventional IVF is the IVF that we all know, where you go and you inject yourself with Menopur or Follistim or Gonal F, and you grow all of your follicles as big as you can, and you harvest all of these eggs. And all of this medication costs anywhere between $4,000 to $6,000.
We thought that's the only way to do IVF. Until I visit Japan, visit Dr. Kado, and then I realized that there's a different way to do IVF.
Yeah.
Which is that in Japan, they're doing IVF. Most patients don't use medication. Completely natural.
Completely natural. Like, no medication. Like, how? You're just going in there and getting one egg?
Nowadays, there's one clinic in Tokyo, and the 100% natural IVF.
Wow.
And but the in Kado, the latest clinic, and they're probably doing maybe, I would say, 20 to 30% natural and another 70 or 80% of minimum stimulation IVF.
And what clinic did you say just now?
Called Kado Lady Clinic.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And that's the doctor?
Dr. Kado, which I met.
Oh, got it. Dr. Kado.
Yes.
If you're in Japan and you want to look it up, it's K-A-T-O, Ladies Clinic.
So he was pioneer in the area of natural IVF and minimum stimulation IVF.
Uh-huh.
So that's what how I get into this. And because of that visit, I realized something, they are doing something extraordinary.
Yeah.
So then I asked him if I can spend some time to work with him.
Yes.
And he was so kind and allowed me to do that.
So then also, Dr. Yelian took a sabbatical and spent many months over in Dr. Kado's clinic.
And so I was able to do egg retrieval and doing embryo transfers. And most importantly, I have a chance to review and read and almost every single patient charts.
Yes.
And so I understand how they're doing that and why and what time is the best time to give patient an ovulation trigger and when to do egg retrieval and how to make embryo, when to do embryo transfer. And that the way of doing quite different than what we practice IVF in the United States.
Yeah.
So that sabbatical really changed my mind. And also I know that something would be revolutionized in the field of IVF, especially in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So then I decided came back to the U.S. and sent my department chairman resignation letter and then opened the IVF clinic in Irvine, California.
Wow. Okay. So explain to us what natural or precision, did you call it precision one time?
Yes. We will get the precision IVF a little bit later.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
So so-called natural IVF, which is patient, as you know, woman, they have a follicle developed each month. Usually when they're starting with the menstrual cycle and the woman's follicle starting growing, develop. And at the middle of the cycle, like a cycle day 11 or 12, and the follicle become big, like a 17, 18, 19 millimeter.
Right.
So at that point, and the ovulation will be gradually occur.
Mm-hmm.
So after the ovulation, and then the follicle starting produce progesterone and ready for egg be fertilized and then for embryo implantation. So so-called natural IVF, just don't use any medication and just follow woman's follicle development pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Before egg ovulation, we take egg out.
And it's just the one egg?
Often, just get one egg.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes we get two, three, four. One patient, I got six eggs from her. natural IVF cycle, you'd be surprised. And sometimes we do get multiple follicles.
And so I just have too many questions for one. I want to let you keep going and then I'll ask questions.
Sure. So natural IVF, which means we can take it one egg, and this is a body naturally selected egg.
Yes.
As you probably know, each woman and each cycle, if you just see one follicle and that developed, but because of this follicle, actually the body and the ovary, they activate multiple follicles. Hundreds of follicles. They are competing each other.
Uh-huh.
But only one become a dominant follicle.
And does it become a dominant follicle because it's better than the rest?
Theoretically.
Okay.
But sometimes, we do get some other follicles.
Uh-huh.
But because of the quality of eggs mainly depends on woman's age.
Right.
So with woman's age increase, the quality of eggs deteriorating.
Yeah. Yes, go for it. You can answer, yeah.
That was Dr. Yelian's phone mm-hmm. ringing. I told him to answer it. So while he's on the phone, let me just check in with you. Are you getting this? So natural IVF, they just wait for the dominant follicle to grow to the time of ovulation, and then they go in there and they grab it before it's ovulated. But when they do that, it's not just a dominant follicle that's there some of the time. There are still sometimes smaller follicles hanging out as well.
Where were we?
So we talk about natural IVF cycles, mm-hmm. and so because of this is naturally selected, and there should be good quality eggs.
Right.
So now I back to your questions about what's the difference between natural IVF and the conventional IVF.
Yes.
So the natural IVF, which is don't use medication,
yep.
following your natural developed follicle, and take an egg out before ovulation, and then make an embryo, and then chance of an embryo results pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Conventional IVF, which is practiced in the 99% of IVF practice in the United States,
mm-hmm.
and no matter your age, no matter what's your fertility goal, and just using medication, and usually spend $5,000 or $6,000 medication, and produce 20, 30, or 40 eggs at
yeah.
one time. Then they always believe the more the better.
Right.
So then after you receive so many eggs, fertilize all the eggs, make embryos, and then from those embryos, you select a few good embryos for transfer.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, with the now genetic testing, you can make sure we select the only embryos, a chromosome normal embryo for transfer, and that can get women pregnant. But
right.
the truth is, do we need so many eggs? Do we need so many embryos to get a woman pregnant?
Right.
So now this is already 2020, so we're no longer like 10, 20, 30 years ago. Now we have so good technology, we can select in good embryos without to produce 20, 30, or 40 eggs to get a woman pregnant.
Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So now I share with you the story. 2012, which is 8 years ago,
yeah.
and we started the first precision IVF.
Uh-huh.
So that patient was from Houston,
uh-huh.
young couple, and both are physicians, and they have all the financial resources to do IVF in Houston, but they decided to come to Irvine, California to do IVF.
Mm-hmm.
They wished to do IVF without using any medication, which we did. So the woman was a 37 or 38 years old woman.
Uh-huh.
And so she has a history of endometriosis. So we did a complete natural cycle IVF, no medication. And so she has one follicle. We take one egg out using one sperm from her husband, made one embryo.
Yeah.
And we did a single embryo genetic testing.
Yeah.
Confirm that embryo is a chromosome normal embryo.
Oh my God.
We transfer that embryo to her uterus. And she results pregnancy, deliver a healthy baby girl.
Wow.
So that's the first precision IVF.
Why is that different than natural?
Precision IVF depends on what's the patient's age,
mm-hmm.
and what is her ovarian function,
okay.
and also what is her fertility goal
uh-huh.
to determine a protocol suitable for her to get how many eggs to achieve pregnancy she wanted.
I see.
For example, if a woman, 34 years old, the only reason she wanted to do IVF is because of her tube blocked.
Uh-huh.
And so she could have just like all other women to achieve pregnancy without any medication, without IVF. But because of her tube blocked and so she cannot conceive naturally. Mm-hmm. So for 34 years old woman, we know her chance of embryo to be chromosome normal is about a 1 in 2 to 2 out of 3.
Mm-hmm.
So very good chance her embryo will be good.
Mm-hmm.
So for this woman, and we don't need to use $5,000 medication, produce 20 or 30 eggs to get her pregnant.
Right.
I know if I can get 4 eggs from her, I will get her pregnant.
Yeah.
Because the probability is that high. So for those patients, I can just choose, give her just a pill, make her to follicle grow, and then we get 4 eggs. And then get 4 eggs, make 2 embryos, and I know among those 2 embryos, most likely have 1 normal embryo. I can get her pregnant. So why not do that? So that's called a precision IVF.
Right. Got it.
So this is why. So I think we are launching a new program and this year.
Yes.
And so the new precision IVF, and we can almost every woman, and if they wish to do IVF, and so this will be qualified for the precision IVF, and will be based on the patient's age and her ovarian function and also her fertility goal.
Mm-hmm.
And we design a special protocol for her.
Okay.
And get as many eggs she needed.
Mm-hmm.
And get as many good embryos.
Yeah.
And then we can have an embryo transfer and get her pregnant.
Okay. Sounds great.
Yes.
So, and your success rates are pretty high, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What do you attribute the success, the higher success rate? Is it the fact that you're just giving more personalized medicine, or is it that when you're doing conventional IVF, you're gathering the one good egg, but you're also getting all these loser eggs?
Right, exactly. And also, I could give you an example. And I had a patient who is African-American female, mm-hmm. and so she did a conventional IVF before. And so using like $5,000 medication and gather 19 eggs. And the chance of a fresh embryo transfer failed, and the frozen embryo transfer again, and there's nothing left. So when she did come to us, and we believe at her age, we don't need 19 eggs to get her pregnant.
Right.
So we just let her take a clomiphene only.
Did you say Clomid?
Yeah, only medication she taking was Clomid.
Okay.
And we were able to total get 8 eggs and 5 fertilized making embryo and 3 blasts and 2 PGS normal embryo. So the first embryo transfer, she resolves pregnancy. The money she spent, $50, compared to $5,000 medication she spent on the medication.
Right.
So I think probably there's something to do with because of, I believe, and the medication to make follicle grow,
mm-hmm.
is just like you planting flower and give flowers a fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
Not always get more fertilizer, the better.
Right.
Very simple concept.
Yeah. Who do you think is the best candidate is this the best way to go for somebody that has low AMH or somebody that has PCOS or endometriosis where hormones might be bad for them?
I think precision IVF apply to everyone.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I like what you said earlier, too, about like a young girl who's fertile, but she's got tubal blockage.
Right. So
there's no reason to get 20 eggs.
Exactly. Yeah. Perfect candidate. And so for those women have a lower ovarian reserve. And so I know if a woman has low ovarian reserve, which means have very few follicles.
Yes.
And her FSH level usually very high.
Her what? Oh, her FSH
levels? FSH level very high. Yes. Mm-hmm. And the AMH level is very low.
AMH.
Yeah. AMH level very low. I give you an example, and we had a patient who flew all the way from UK.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was 40 years old, and when she came to us, and because she said the doctor from UK told her she have to use a donor egg, otherwise she has no chance to be successful,
uh-huh.
because her FSH was like at 22, 24.
Uh-huh.
Her AMH level was 0.01.
Wow.
And so she only have 1 or 2 follicles at any given time.
Wow.
So we finished 3 natural cycle IVF for her. After the finished 3 natural cycle IVF, and we were able to get 3 eggs, made 3 blasts, and made 2 PGS normal embryos.
Wow.
First embryo transfer results pregnancy. Now she still have one.
Oh my God.
Normal embryo left for waiting for transfer.
Unbelievable. And how old was she?
She's the time was 40. Now she's 42 years old.
Yeah. So in each retrieval, you got 1 egg or?
For her, it was because she only have such a high FSH level and very few follicles. Yes, we did have 1 egg.
So I remember during your seminar that I came to that you guys said that for a woman that's 40, I think 41, or I'm 41, but somewhere in my age range, you guys said you wanted a certain amount of embryos was it 5 or 10 or I don't remember.
Very, very good. And actually, we did a study in 2016, and we analyzed about 1,800 embryos at a different age group. And we found out the women younger than 34 years of age, the chance of an embryo to be chromosome normal is about 2 out of 3.
Okay.
So women between 35 to 37 years old, the chance of an embryo to be normal is about a 1 in 2.
Okay.
Women between 38 to 40, the chance for embryo to be healthy is about a 1 in 3 to 1 in 4. 41 to 42 years old, the chance of embryo to be healthy is a 1 in 5 to 1 in 6.
Okay.
And the woman between 43 to 44, the chance of embryo to be normal is a 1 in 8 to 1 in 10.
Okay.
So obviously above 44 years of age and the chance of a less than 1 in 10, but it's still possible.
Yeah.
And so this is why we help a woman between 44, 45, 46, 47, even 48 years old woman successful with their own eggs.
Yes, I remember you saying there was somebody that you treated who was 48 and she had a baby. That's wild.
Yes.
So if your intention is to get, for a 41-year-old such as myself, 5 embryos, does that mean that you would want to do 5 cycles?
Or, not necessary. Depends of that depends of how's your ovarian function.
Okay.
So if your ovarian function is good and your FSH level between 5 to 10 and the antral follicle counts between 5 to 10, and I can use a minimum stimulation IVF, maybe get 5 or 10 eggs at one time. That depends of what is the patient's FSH level and how many follicles. And the minimum stimulation usually I would give some kind of some oral pills, including either Clomid or Letrozole.
Okay.
And meanwhile, I can, on top of the oral pills, I can also give some injection medication, including Gonal-F, Menopur, or Fortistim.
But just a smaller amount.
Very small dosage. Okay. And so just boost up and make follicle grow.
Okay. Because if, you know, I think about it, about coming here next. Actually, the last time we talked, I had just done an embryo transfer. And I don't know for sure where I'm at right now. Friday, I did my first beta and my HCG was only 5.98. And that and that was 9 days after the transfer. And my next beta was Monday and it was 26.3. And I have another blood test tomorrow. My doctor doesn't have any high hopes for anything, but...
Anything's possible. And tell you a story. I have a woman from Japan, and her first beta was a 6.9.
Yeah.
Then second one was a 12.
Yeah.
Then 24. Finally delivered baby.
Wow.
So it can happen. How
but at this point, last Friday, I was 9 days after the transfer.
So, was it day 3 transfer or day 5 transfer?
It might have been day 6.
I see. Day 6 transfer. Okay.
Yeah. And the embryos looked beautiful, I must say. I can for sure say that. They were gorgeous.
Good.
But so tomorrow will be 9 plus 7, 16 days after a 6-day transfer. So that's 22 days, right? So she said that if my... my HCG isn't over 300, that she'll have me stop taking my PIO shots and estrogen and progesterone. Does that sound like a normal thing to you?
The based on the HCG level doubling, and it seems like it's a little bit slow, and also seems like the timing of the HCG pattern may not be looks normally.
Yeah.
So I think your doctor want you to stop your medication. There is a possibility he or she may be concerned about the possible ectopic pregnancy.
Right.
So just keep in mind. So I think, anything is possible. So just any chance, and just continue observe.
So I'm curious if, like, she and I talked about ectopic pregnancies and the chance of that and everything. She doesn't think that's, you know, she says her gut doesn't, that's not what she thinks is going to happen. But she said that if it rises erratically, then it's a sign of an ectopic pregnancy. Also, if it rises slowly, then it's a sign of an ectopic pregnancy. So in what world would I know which is which? Like, if tomorrow I go in and it's over 300, I would be excited. But then that's a bad sign because it's a big jump.
I don't think you needed too much worry.
Yeah.
And because when the HCG level is 300, and which means amount of the 12 blood cells is very few, And so your gestational sac and also the fetal tissue is still minimum.
Yes.
Fairly unlikely, even if in the tube, and there will not be rupture.
Right.
So as long as your tube is not rupture, and so usually have not have any life threatened. So I think you don't need to worry too much. And so, but the key thing is when the HCG level reached over the 1,000. So at that point, if we are doing transvaginal ultrasound, we still can identify fetal tissue in the uterine cavity, then more likely you have an ectopic pregnancy.
Okay.
So at that point, we can always stop medication, and we can also give you some injection called methotrexate to stop
the She told me about methotrexate and then said that it's a chemotherapy agent and that if I wouldn't be able to try again for 3 months. Question about that.
Mm-hmm.
Would I be able to do a retrieval?
Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting idea. Not that I'm having an ectopic pregnancy.
Right. So just to think of the worst.
But if that happens, then I'm coming to you for sure. I got to keep working on
Hopefully
it.
Hopefully you don't need to come to see me.
So. Right. Well, I do. So I have two more that are frozen, two more embryos, but they're both 4 cc's. But when I don't know.
Yeah, and 41 is not a bad age. So I think at your age, and so as we know, and the chance of an embryo to be normal is 1 in 5, 1 in 6. So
yeah.
I think so. As long as you don't give up, continue banking the egg, banking embryos, and you'll be successful.
Well, for myself, would you think that I should do, if let's say worst case scenario, and my 4 cc's don't work next round, and this isn't a pregnancy right now. Would you suggest that I... Oh, you already told me. I was going to say, should I do multiple... but yeah, you need a full medical history for that.
Yeah, first of all, we need to do the exam and just to see how's your baseline FSH level and how many anterior follicle counts you have and also what's your baseline AMH level. So we can design a protocol suitable for you. And so if you say, Dr. Yenian, I'm someone don't like medication, and I would rather to do multiple cycles to banking more eggs, making more embryos, and then natural cycle IVF may be good for you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say, Dr. Yenian, I just want time is an issue for me. I want to get pregnant quickly. So if that case, then I'll be design a protocol, get a one time, has to use a little bit more medication and hopefully get more eggs and make more embryos. And hopefully one cycle we can have identify a PGS normal embryo. And so hopefully that embryo can resolve pregnancy. You can do just by one times.
Yeah. And so do you always suggest PGS testing? It's at a certain age?
That's a good question. So I think in general, I using 35 or 36 years old as a cutoff age.
Okay.
And if a woman younger than 35 years old age, and if she does not wish to do PGS testing, I'm okay. And mainly because of, as I said earlier, so woman younger than 35 years old, and so her chance of embryo to be normal is about 1 in 2 to 1 in 2 to 3, 2 out of 3. So the probability is so high. So I think even given embryo, the chance for she has a good chance to be successful.
Yeah.
But if a woman at the age of 41, and we know the chance of embryo to be healthy is only 1 in 4 to 1 in 5, 1 in 6.
Yeah.
So the probability is low. So I just hate let you chance multiple times and failed all the transfers.
Yeah.
And even worse, what if embryo has Down syndrome? So you chance for embryo and the results pregnancy, you're very happy. But when you're doing amniocentesis, you find out embryo has Down syndrome. Then you terminate pregnancy. Then you take another 3 or 4 month recovery. Then all the time wasted.
Yeah.
There's one thing is I want to each one of our audience know is all this is probability.
Yes.
And as I said, a woman at age 41 years of age, and the chance of embryo to be normal is 1 in 4, 1 in 5, 1 in 6.
Yeah.
And we usually, sometimes we can give 1 in 4 to 1 in 6 because we do have some people are very lucky, and there's just 4 embryos already have 1 normal embryo.
Yeah.
The one truly lucky patient I want to share with you, her story was now she's about 31 weeks pregnant, that woman.
Yeah.
And so she was a woman from North Carolina. And the woman, and so she has, when she came to us, is 40 years of age, and she has a very poor ovarian function, and has done multiple monitoring, and the FSH level always very high, 40, 50, 60, 70, and so her AMH level is almost undetectable. So when she came to us, it was fairly skeptical because most doctor told her the only chance you can get pregnant is donor egg. But this is just the newly wedded couple, and she really wanted to have a biological child.
Mm-hmm.
So that woman pretty persistent. She came to us and fly multiple trips and spend 2 years work with us.
Mm-hmm.
We only get one egg from her.
Wow.
The egg was get from the cycle. Her baseline FS level was 85.
85 is very high.
Very high.
Which is very bad.
Very bad.
And we have to explain that to my audience. So sure. FSH is the hormone that your pituitary gland is, right?
Yes.
Is producing. And it's telling your ovaries to grow more follicles. And it's super high when you're older because there's not very many follicles down there. So your FSH is just pumping hard.
Exactly. Yes. So the higher FSH you have, the poor of any reserve.
Okay.
So her FSH, normal woman at the FSH level, and it should be between 5 to 10.
Okay.
So the FSH level is 10 to 15. We know your FSH level elevated, and your ovarian function deteriorating. And if your FSH level above 20, we consider deteriorating significantly.
Yeah.
And so above 40, we call you most likely you become menopause.
Wow.
So someone at FSH level 85 is just almost unthinkable. There's just no way you can get an egg from her.
And you took her on as a patient regardless of that.
We did.
You don't have rules against taking
no, I think age and ovarian reserve, and that's all the number. Number's number.
So and you
I
don't, a lot of clinics, they care about their you know,
stats.
Rankings, their stats with mm-hmm. the CDC and all right. that stuff. You guys don't pay attention to that stuff.
We feel bad because I think CDC data, and especially lately, last few years, in the study using they say you need so many cycles to achieve pregnancy. But this is the numbers comparison for her. I just don't find this is right because we did. Spend so much time for her and spend so many cycles, monitoring cycles, and most cycle canceled because we just cannot get an egg from her.
Yes.
So fortunately, we got an egg from her, and the egg was from the cycle baseline FSH was 85.
Wow.
We were using hormones to lower her FSH level.
What hormones do you use for that?
We're using estrus.
Estrus, okay.
Yes. Using estrus to lower her FSH level, and then eventually her follicle grow.
Okay.
So we received one egg, made one embryo, and that embryo was not tested.
Oh my gosh.
We freeze a day 3 embryo and a compacting and a freeze the embryo.
Day 3 compacting, okay.
Yes, we thought we can get more eggs from her. Then we tried a few more cycles, but there's still no more.
Oh, you froze blood. It at day 3.
We freeze day 3.
Okay, yes. Got it.
And then after 2 years, exact 2 years,
yeah.
One embryo and one egg.
Another one?
No, just that's
oh,
the only
okay,
one.
Okay.
So we agreed, and it's time for transfer.
Yeah.
July 23, we transferred the embryo. Now she's 31 weeks pregnant.
Unbelievable.
And actually, even better. And on the 10 weeks pregnancy, we did an NIPT test.
Yeah.
And showing very low risk of the abnormality.
Gosh.
So this is
amazing.
So we're so happy for her. But again, when she got that egg, she was 41 years old. And as you know, the mathematical probability, she should be 1 in 5, 1 in 6.
Yeah.
No, but she only won. So.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I had 5 blastocysts in my IVF cycle and none of them came back normal. I was unlucky. It's okay.
Lucky day we come.
I'm waiting for that lucky day.
Yes.
I see so much joy in your face when you're talking about each of these women. It's pretty wonderful. I can imagine that you feel maybe not godlike, but you're creating life. That's a pretty wonderful job.
Yeah, and even more important, our team, just that we are constantly to offer this complimentary IVF for patients. And
what is that? What do you say?
We're offering complimentary IVF for patients.
You are?
So I think we offer so many. And actually today, and the reason why I'm happy was because today we're choosing another woman to be giving her IVF for free.
Amazing. Okay, so let me just tell the listeners, when I went to your seminar, you gave away, you basically, they have an informational seminar once a month in each of their locations. And at least in the one I was in, there was a raffle and one person was
two seats down from me, and she won a free round of IVF. Is this what you're talking about?
No, it's different.
Something different?
Yes, different.
What's that one about?
This is called a Tis of the Season.
Tis of the Season?
Yeah. Okay. So I think every year at the end of the, during Christmas time, and so we led all the people, and they share with us her fertility journey. Uh-huh. And to see how having their child meaningful to them,
yeah,
and why we should help them to give them a complementary IVF treatment.
Oh my God, that's
so
wonderful.
So a couple, and what, then
they write something for you?
Rewrite the story to us. And
oh my
so
gosh.
We have a team of a doctor, nurse, and they review all the articles. And then we believe this woman we should choosing to give her a treatment, a free treatment. So today we just made an announcement. So.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I heard somebody talking about it in the lobby. Oh,
okay.
That's, yeah, so that's wonderful. About, yeah. Yeah.
We have many of those women, and so we just feel that we're touched by all those stories. And
yeah.
So because we believe this is a woman, we need to help them. And because yeah. many of them obviously have financial challenges.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they were not the position.
Yeah, yeah. I wrote down a couple of questions when we were in the seminar. So
okay.
I just want to see if I have
sure.
any, I mean, if any of them are unanswered. So how many eggs do I want to retrieve in order to make a certain amount of embryos? Like if I want to make 5 embryos, how many eggs do we want to retrieve?
That's a good question. Depends on the woman's age. And usually also depends on which lab you work with. And the lab is so crucial.
How's your lab? Is it good?
Very, very good. And actually, yesterday we have an embryologist meeting, our doctor's meeting with our embryologist.
Mm-hmm.
So our embryologist presented us the data.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular week, we analyze data every week. So this week is a very, very good week. And
uh-huh.
so the embryo-made blast is almost 80%.
Wow.
Either younger than 35 years of age.
Uh-huh.
Women between 36 to 40,
uh-huh.
the chance of making embryos are 60%.
Okay.
And the 41 to 42 is kind of 50%.
Okay.
So very, very good chance of making embryos. So I think to answer your question, if you are doing this week,
mm-hmm.
and so we make 6 eggs, should get 3 embryos.
Gotcha.
Processed.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. That makes sense. Well, I just want to again ask, like, just about the concept of, like, the dominant follicle, the egg that's in there being the best quality one. So what does that mean for any other eggs that you might get in a cycle? Are they, you think, not as good? Or you obviously think some of them are valuable because you do mini IVF.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's a very good question. And the hypothetical speaking, and because of the naturally selecting dominant follicle,
yeah.
and in general, and although I don't think this is a very well studied has been done,
mm-hmm.
but I do believe the egg quality
uh-huh.
mainly associated with the woman's age.
Uh-huh.
So as long as it's young, and the majority of eggs still are good. Even if not dominant follicle, they still be good. So as long as you can, a woman is younger age. So I think if you use too much medication to make this follicle grow, and that have some kind of impact of egg quality.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, if you're naturally selecting and or if you use mild stimulation and to make follicle grow, I think most of our eggs still will be good.
Do you ever get more than one follicle on a completely natural cycle with no
mm-hmm.
medication?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so what is the, your lead follicle would be about, you said 17 to 20 millimeters, did you say that?
Depends on woman's age. And if a woman younger, and I can let the follicle grow a little bit bigger. But if a woman getting older, like 42, 43, and 40, so I would like to retrieve egg much earlier. Like
interesting.
A 14, 15, 16 millimeter follicle, I need to trigger her.
Interesting.
So, when we trigger her and we get a dominant follicle, and sometimes we can get eggs from a small non-dominant follicle. And very often you'll be surprised. And I think I still remember the patient I treated her, and she was from Las Vegas. And that patient, I get 6 eggs from complete natural cycle.
Oh, wow.
And actually she has 3 mature eggs.
Wow.
So either could happen. And
so what's the smallest size that you would retrieve?
Any follicle size above 6 or 7 millimeter,
okay.
I can retrieve. And I do have a patient that had a live birth from the follicle 8.5 millimeter.
Wow. Wow. That's so cool.
Yeah.
My only other question is, why do we do ICSI when you have frozen sperm from a sperm bank? Because I'm using sperm from a sperm bank.
Mm-hmm.
And quality of that sperm, shouldn't it be pretty good since they've gone through rigorous testing and they're young kids? And
Yeah.
Why ICSI?
For two reasons. And ICSI, number one, and the fertilization rate is higher.
Mm.
So if you don't do ICSI and just let a sperm and egg in the culture, same culture dish, and the fertilization rate usually is about 60 to 70%.
Mm-hmm.
But if you use ICSI, and the fertilization rate should be 80 to 90%.
And so does everybody just do ICSI for everything now?
Actually, we do. And yeah. Actually, in our clinic, and most patients do ICSI.
Okay.
And so that's number one. And number two, even more importantly now, because of ICSI, which means using single sperm,
yeah.
Put inside of the egg,
mm-hmm.
make a fertilization occur. So if the later, and we want to do embryo to genetic testing,
mm-hmm.
so that embryo more easily to be not be contaminated. For example, if your egg be fertilized by the sperm, and the multiple sperm may attach on the zona pellucida, which is the outside layer.
Yeah.
So those sperm has contained DNA.
Uh-huh.
So when you do biopsy of the embryo, and you could be contaminated with some kind of sperm DNA.
Interesting.
So that would be not accurate. So I think with the ICSI, have the embryo biopsy be more accurate.
Their mess all over the outside of the
egg. Exactly, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another reason.
Interesting. Have you ever heard of the Zymote chip? Is that what it's called?
Zymote.
Yeah. So that's for selection?
Sperm.
Do you guys use that?
We're just ready to get it. Actually, we talked with the company and a couple of days ago, and so we'll be starting to try that also.
Interesting. Yeah, one of my clinics doesn't use it, where I did my IVF, and then the place where I did my egg thawing, that place uses the Zymote. Is it called chip? I don't remember. But they use that.
Yes.
So you don't know if you like it or not yet.
The concept wise, I think it's good. It has potential and be easier to selecting good sperm and the more natural selection. So I think making sense.
Yeah.
The Zymote sperm separation device facilitates the separation and preparation of highly motile sperm with normal morphology to be used in assisted reproductive technology procedures. The Zymote devices can be used to prepare sperm for ICSI, intracytoplasmic sperm injection, and intrauterine insemination, IUIs. So anyway, ask your clinic if they use it.
Yeah, I'm so glad you come here for our interview for today, and because of actually just off this week, we are launching a personalized precision IVF in Acadia office. And
I'm in your Arcadia office right now, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh.
So, this is the first time we offer this. And so, one personalized precision IVF.
Yes.
Including medication.
Yeah.
Including egg retrieval. Including ICSI. Including embryo freezing. Including PGS testing. All inclusive, $10,000.
That's amazing.
And the most centers, if you pull it together, $25,000.
That's amazing. And it's amazing that you're talking about your costs openly and not keeping it shrouded from the world, because it's so hard to get anybody to talk about the actual costs of any of these things. So that's one cycle, including any of the, if you had to do mini IVF, including medications for that?
All inclusive.
Wow. That sounds great. I'm glad that you exist. I'm sure my listeners are going to get a lot out of this. And I know a couple listeners that I think, well, one of them is going to contact you tomorrow because I told her about you today.
Okay, very good.
But I think you're doing a good thing here.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time. And I appreciate what you're doing.
You're welcome. I hope we can help more people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, what a lovely fella and what a lovely idea. Definitely something for all of us who are trying to conceive or going through this process should consider. If you're interested in Life IVF Center and want to attend one of their monthly seminars, go to lifeivfcenter.com. They have two locations, one in Irvine and one in Arcadia. Now, it's Monday afternoon and all day long I've been wondering about something. You know how earlier I said I'm pregnant until proven otherwise? And you know how I held off on going to the Korean spa because I thought there might be possibly, probably not, but possibly a sliver of hope? Even though it was just a sliver? Well, it occurred to me that progesterone is produced by the corpus luteum, and the corpus luteum, which is the empty follicle that your egg came out of, doesn't exist in me because I didn't ovulate this month. Does that make sense? You would only have a corpus luteum if you ovulated and the egg came out of the follicle, creating a corpus luteum. Okay, so anyway, my ovulation was suppressed by estrogen this month so that when it came time for the transfer, we could control the amount of progesterone in my system with progesterone supplements. Which means, if by any sliver of a chance I am having a viable pregnancy, now that I've stopped the progesterone supplements, there's no progesterone coming from any source, internal or external. Uh-oh. So then, I emailed Dr. Chung, of course, because she's so patient and she answers my questions. It's very kind of her. Here's what she said. You are right that you don't have a corpus luteum to support a pregnancy right now. It's always a tough call when deciding when to stop the meds, because the last thing I would want to do is stop supporting a pregnancy that might have a chance of making it. This has to be balanced against the alternative, prolonging the inevitable. Since the beta was so much lower than it should have been last week, I felt it was a better choice to stop the meds so that hopefully we can move on to brighter days ahead, sooner rather than later. If it will help you to see what the beta is doing tomorrow instead of waiting until Wednesday, we can totally do that. Okay, and that makes total sense, and I completely trust her judgment. But since she gave me the option, and since my pee stick was darker than ever this morning, I'm gonna go and do another beta tomorrow, Tuesday. Because if for some crazy reason it's up there and it's viable, well, then I'll start on the progesterone again. It's not gonna happen. But I don't know, y'all. I do not know. But you know what I do know? It's Monday night and The Bachelor is on. It's going to start in an hour. I'm not going to put anything in my urethra tonight. I'm just going to watch the show. I love you all so much. If you want to send me a message, email me at spermcast@gmail.com. Text me at 323-741-1818. Leave me a voicemail at 323-741-1818. Find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at spermcast. Oh, you know what I didn't push a lot this week? My Patreon. Patreon.com/spermcast. You know what happens when you sign up for Patreon. You get lots of extra content and you don't have to wait for updates. You can find out what's going on in real time. Another way you can support the podcast is by subscribing, rating, and reviewing this podcast on Apple iTunes. It really helps. Go for it. Go do it. Oh, here's another thing. Urios, this network that my podcast is on, was in the LA Times this weekend, the Sunday paper. Amazing! Amanda, Maria, and Priyanka, the creators and owners, they were all interviewed. Wonderful article. And Voyage LA did a little piece on me as well. You can find both of those on my Instagram at spermcast. Okay, I'm out of here. Love you so much. Talk to you later. Thanks for being my pal.
He could be bald and bearded, short or tall, funny, smart, love basketball, from gay, straight, black, white. With an underbite, I just need sperm. Spermcast.
An Erios production.
Powered by Acast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.